Okay, we're in chapter 16, and continuing along in this wrap-up of this section of the Tanya. In chapter 16, people have a lot of difficulty with this chapter because they can't relate to the problem that this person is having. Okay, what's the deal over here? This is a person who's going through the motions. He's doing everything that he's supposed to be doing, but he's stuck. Okay, and it's not because of any external thing, it's because that's probably basically the best that he can do. Mm-hmm. Okay, now he talks later on in chapter 29 of melancholy and not being able to get over the hump and suggests things there, but that's not for a person who's stuck innately, but this person is. Mm-hmm. So he says, this is a general rule when it comes to serving Hashem if you're a Beinonim. The main thing is to rule over the left ventricle of the heart, meaning the animal passions. How do you do that? Through the light of Hashem, which illuminates his godly soul, which is in his brain, so that the brain rules over the heart. Okay, that's generally our modus operandi. How does the person control themselves? Well, they stop and they think.
I like the muscle of the light, too, because to me, when as you were reading that, I was thinking, whenever people do things wrong and they know they're wrong, they try to sneak, but when everything's out in the open, you know, and they know they're being
right
watched, you know, then they're much less likely to do those things. That seems like that's kind of what...
Yeah, and it also, it's a sort of like, now, it's an expression, his soul is like charged.
Right.
And you understand, when a person does the right thing, and I have an opportunity to listen, I could do the wrong thing, and I really want to do the wrong thing, because it's a really comfortable thing to be doing, and there's lots of gain for me. But when a person stops and says, no, I'm not going to do that, suddenly it's like, thus spake Zarathustra, you know, da 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 da. You know, so and that's an expression of the light of his godly soul, which is getting its charge from Hashem, because he said back in chapter 13, if it wouldn't be the fact that Hashem helps the person, they really wouldn't be able to have control over their passions. It's only because Hashem gives them like a little battery pack, you know, a little plug to attach themselves, that they say, nope, not doing it. Now, how does he look at Shemiz? When he meditates with his mind, with the greatness of Hashem, and to give birth from his understanding, Ruach Das V'yiras Hashem B'maychai, a spirit of das, and das we're going to translate as not knowledge per se, but a spirit of connection, that he feels connected to Hashem. Mm-hmm. And the connection to Hashem will have him to have at least an intellectual awe of Hashem. And having at least an intellectual awe and reverence of Hashem without having any kind of feeling in the heart will at least tell the person, don't do that. Because you're not supposed to be. I understand why I'm not supposed to. Whether it be a Torah prohibition or a rabbinic prohibition. Even if that be some sort of a light transgression of the sages. Which that would be like, for example, muksa. Picking up, playing with pencils on Shabbos, for example. I'm not going to play with a pencil on Shabbos. No. How wrong is it? Well, it's not as wrong as killing somebody. And that will arouse in a love of Hashem in his heart, in the right ventricle, with a longing and a lusting to cleave to Hashem. And how is it that you show God, if you say, I love you, show me. How do we show God? We love him by fulfilling all of the positive commandments, the 248 positive commandments, and all the rabbinic mitzvahs thereof. The Talmud Torah can make a kulam, and study Torah is equal to all. As he said many times already, that a person, if he truly loved Hashem, would always be constantly doing mitzvahs, even to the extent of like Rabba, for example, who called himself a Beinoni. We talked about him in chapter 13 that he wasn't, he was a tzaddik, and why he did. Mm-hmm. So as to even to spend from here to there talking Torah, because I have an opportunity to learn Torah.
I don't have any.
Now with, used to be if you wanted to be walking in the street and studying Torah, you had to know things by heart. So, but now with the electronic age, you can take every class you ever thought possible with you on some electronic recording device and stick it in your car or put earbuds in, and you could be listening to somebody giving a class as you're belechtech avaderech, as you're going in the way. So now it's not so hard. So it's even another excuse that Hashem has taken away from us for why aren't you learning? 35 years ago, a person could come up with an excuse and say, I'm not learning because I don't understand. I speak English and everything's in Hebrew. But then, 32 years ago, there began the English explosion. When I first became religious, there was the Linear Chumash and the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. The Tanya was just translated into English. There was a couple of books here and there. Rabbi Miller had a couple of books. And there was like one or two volumes of Maimonides. And not the English shelf was like... and a lot of dribble and a whole lot of stuff that just wasn't worth it. Okay, but 32 years ago, so the explosion just started. So now a person can say, I can't learn this specific subject because I don't speak Hebrew. Because whatever subject it is that you want to study at this point, it exists in English. So a person has no excuse because they don't understand the language. So now a person can overcome with an excuse, but I spent all this time traveling back and forth. You know what it is, you know, you want me to learn all this stuff by heart, come on, I mean, you know, that. So now you don't even have that excuse. So all you have to do is put everything into podcasts or download it to your MP3 player and zip it into your cigarette lighter with the FM transmitter and voila, you're good to go. It's like you're sitting in your living room with your favorite rabbi lecturing.
Pretty much.
Okay, and there you are, and you're just like the whole day. You could be your back and forth, and you're and now so Hashem took away another excuse why we're not learning. Okay, you come up with another excuse, and they'll invent something else coming up sometime in the near future. Okay, that's why it says the Talmud Torah can I get kula? And any shear that you're going to have, even if it's not such the greatest shear. It's a whole lot better than talk radio.
I agree.
That's excluding, of course, the Jewish Hour, heard Fridays 3 to 5 on WPON 1460 AM and www.wpon.com. V'yeser al-kain, tzorech li'eid ha'klal gadol b'avodas l'beinoni. And he says there's something else. That's under normal circumstances. From the beginning of the chapter right down to that dot, that's normal service. That's normal. You're running the way you're supposed to be running. Everything is fine. Okay? But there's another rule. He says, yes, okay, so it's a clog. There's another rule by Inani. Shagam im ein yad sikhle veruach binase masegis lahilat avas Hashem bihizgalas libay. Let's say, for example, that if his intellect, his understanding, does not comprehend so much to give birth to a love in a revealed way in the heart, the optimally it should be that that his heart should be inflamed with a fiery love for God, and he should desire with a longing and a lusting and a desire more geshes believe, which is felt in the heart. He doesn't have this. Okay, it says that's part of the commandment of Avas Hashem. Avas Hashem means I love Hashem, and I feel it. And Alter Rebbe says, just as it is that when you put on your tefillin and you feel them on your arm and on your head, that's the place of where the tefillin goes, and you can feel them there, so too also you should feel the love of Hashem in your heart, that's where that goes. And this person, he's going through the motions, he's doing everything right, he doesn't feel it. He doesn't have that longing, lusting, and desiring felt in the heart. And he's going to talk about this at greater length through chapters 18 and following. What does he have? He has a concealed love in his brain and in the recesses of his heart. So what has he got? And he explains why this is different than chapter 18 and different than chapter 29, which are two places where he talks about going through the motions and not feeling it. Each chapter is talking about a different going through the motions and not feeling it. Mm-hmm. What this person has, it, he says in the notes, the reason for this, why he does not feel it. He's sitting, he's meditating, he's got it all down, he knows what to do, he's doing the motions, he's walking the walk, but nothing happening, because his brain, and his soul, they are in a state of pregnancy, vehelam, and concealment, teichatvuna, within this understanding. And not in a revealed way, meaning to say that it's possible that why is this person who's doing everything the way he's supposed to be doing? He gets A plus for effort. And he doesn't suddenly, he doesn't feel a great burning love for Hashem. It could very well be that the source of his soul is one which does not express a great love of Hashem. He calls his soul in a state of pregnancy. What's pregnancy? Pregnancy, there's something there. But it's not a person, but there's something there. Okay, that's how we talk about in halacha. You know, the abortion on demand is totally and completely forbidden in Judaism. But it says, how do we know about the whole concept? It says in the Chumash, you have two people fighting, and one of them pushes into somebody and pushes a pregnant woman and she miscarries. So what do? They go to court and he has to pay. The guy who did the pushing has to pay a fine for damages caused for the miscarriage. It's not even considered unintentional, accidental murder. It's an assault. And handle like any other assault.
It's compensation. It's not
correct.
It's not something that you get. Yeah.
Correct. It's a compensation for damages caused. You break a window, you pay for it. Cause a miscarriage, you pay for it. Because the fetus is considered to be a body part of the mother.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, you take all kinds of wonderful pictures of in vivo feti. Their high-definition color. You can see exactly what the kid looks like these days. Yeah. All kinds of wonderful camera devices they have.
3D cameras.
Oh, all kinds of things going on over there, you know? And looks like a baby. Definitely looks like a baby to me. You're getting, you know, and when you think about it, what's the difference between a baby a minute before it's born and a minute after it's born? The difference? It was born. So while it's in a state of pregnancy, it's not here. So much so, there's this big buzzword thing that was going on, I don't know how long ago, maybe 10 years ago already it was. There was a deal with something called late-term abortions. I don't remember such a thing, but what's the deal over here? Is this woman who's after her third trimester, she wants to have an abortion. Okay, generally abortions are recommended before the 24th week, and this woman's in like week 38 and decides, okay, I don't want to be pregnant anymore. My boyfriend left me and that's it, and I can't, you know. So it says in the Chumash, not that we're going to allow just because a boyfriend left, but it says in the Chumash, no, excuse me, it says in Mishnah that if a woman's life is in danger because of the fetus, it says we break the fetus apart and take it out piece by piece to save the life of the mother. Because it's like the same thing like taking out an appendix. And now when is that? That's in the middle of labor.
In the middle of labor, yeah.
That we would do such a thing. Okay, the baby's just about to be born. We say, no, it's the mother's life or the kid's life. We go mother's life, because we're smart. So this soul that the person has, the way it came down into his body, no fault of his own. I mean, this is the way, you can't choose who your parents are. And you can't choose how your soul comes into your body. There's all kinds of things that are talked about as souls coming down into bodies. You have the three brachas Shalosani Goy, Shalosani Ovid, Shalosani Isha. Mm-hmm. Same every morning. Mm-hmm. Okay? So it's talked about in the writings of the Arizal that when a person goes to sleep, you know what happens when a person goes to sleep, according to Avola? Part of the neshama goes up and gets recharged and comes back down. It's very possible that something can stick onto it on the way down. Hashem says, okay, let's see what this guy will do with this. And it's possible, for example, that the soul of a non-Jew would stick onto that 160th. For how long? Who knows? It's not like a dibbuk or one of those things that are talked about in medieval writing where the person has to be exercised. This is the next time he goes to sleep, the thing will leave out and it'll get unstuck. But what happens is, so that person, when he's saying the brachas, so he'll be saying, for example, Hamechim b'tzadi gavu brachot Hashem l'kinu l'rakal ha'aretz ha'lamai brachot Hashem shalo esani yavu brachot shalo esani isha. And for some reason, someone looked up, he forgot to say, and he didn't even realize that he didn't say shalo esani goy. He wasn't even aware that he didn't say shalo esani goy. Why? Because today, he can't say shalo esani goy. He's got this little piece of a neshama stuck onto him. Don't get excited to lose sleep and think, oh no, I'm going to go to sleep, I'm going to come back with a goy in my soul.
You come back as a woman?
Yes! You have a feminine soul. You know, it's possible that a person has a neshama of a nekeva. That's easy, because they're both Jewish. A person could have a female soul in a male body in a female soul.
But it doesn't like stay there. I mean, it's something that, you know.
That could be something that sticks. I mean, it could very well be just that's what a person has.
Right.
You know, but there's no way of discerning that's what it is.
I see.
You know, if you can't say, well, I'm not going to put it on film because I think I have the soul of a woman in my body. Sorry, you have a man's body. You're putting a tefillin on the
soul. You're
putting a tefillin on the body, not the soul.
Right.
Okay.
Understood.
But without being sexist, I mean, but it does happen that things like that happen. I mean, they say that, for example, that a person who's left-handed, so they have to put on tefillin on their right hand instead of on the left hand. They wash the left hand first before they wash the right hand. Okay, everything that they have to do, that we have to do right-handed first, they have to do left hand first. So it says that the neshama comes down, I guess you would say mirrored image, not backwards per se, but the right came into the left, and the left came into the right. So their right hand, because it says in it's described in the Shulchan Aruch, what is how do we describe a left-handed person? It's not just called left hand. The way it's described in Shulchan Aruch is a person whose right hand is his left hand, is the way it's described. Because you're supposed to do things with your right hand. So this guy's doing it with what we would call left hand, but for him, that's his right hand. Meaning what? His soul came into his body, sideways. Is there something wrong with it? No.
Especially not in the world of sports.
It's
yeah.
A challenge.
Yeah, it's whatever it is, you know? You have to buy left-handed teacups, you know, and et cetera. I mean, it's true that a left-handed Kohen was disqualified from working on the altar in the Mizbeach because everything over there was pouring to the right, so you can't pour backwards like this with your left hand. You have to pour frontwards with your right hand. But I'm sure any Kohen who's worth his salt who wanted to would learn how to do that Avodah with his right hand. Otherwise, he's disqualified, you know.
We used to train everybody to do everything with the right hand.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah, you know. So, this person's soul, he's in a state, his soul is not really able to express itself in a revealed way. Even though he's thinking why you should love Hashem, he knows all the jargon, he's going through all the road, and he's just not getting it, sticking it into high gear. And he says, it's nothing to worry about. Because this is the best, listen, who made him that way?
Hashem.
So what is Hashem expecting of him? To do this. You have to do as much as you can. One of my favorite Hasidic stories, let me stop me if I tell this one to you, because I tell the story all the time, involves the brothers Zusha of Anapoli and Eli Melech of Lezhansk, who's known as Rabbi Eli Melech. They used to travel around together and do all kinds of things to help people. One time they got arrested. Ever heard of this story? Tell you this story?
Well, if you did, we'll hear it again. Okay. 101 times.
Okay. So they got arrested and they're thrown into a common cell with thieves and drunks and murderers. And Zusha started crying. This is his brother, Linoleus says to him, what are you crying about? This is not such a terrible thing. I mean, we'll get out soon. There's no point. What are you? And he said, no, I'm crying because there's a latrine in this cell, an open latrine, and we're not allowed to study Torah now. And I'm very upset. I can't study Torah. So his brother said to him, the same Hashem who told you where you can study Torah in a clean place is the same Hashem who tells you that you're not allowed to study Torah in a filthy place. So right now, you have a mitzvah of not learning Torah. So it like hit him, like, what? I have never done the mitzvah of not learning Torah before. This is my first time in my whole entire life. So he got up, he started dancing. And he grabbed the nearest Cossack and started dancing with him. And before long, the whole entire cell is up and dancing. The guards think there's a riot going on. They rush in, everybody stops. They say, what's going on? They all point to Zusha, honor among thieves, right? Him, okay? So the guard says to him, what's making you so happy? So he points at the latrine. So he says, if that's what's making you happy, I'm taking it out of here. So it's the same Hashem who made the person, this is the Hashem who made them the way they are. They can't blame anybody or anything, but this is the way Hashem wants this person to be. And this comes up again later in chapter, like I say, 29, when he talks about this business. Dahainu, it means to say, Shehalev meiv in beruach chachma ubina shebemaycha gedoy l'sein say baruchu. The heart, he understands. I mean, he feels. It's when you say, when you understand with the heart, understand with the brain. You understand with the heart means he feels it. Right. He feels the greatness of the infiniteness of Hashem. The kulei kamei kalei chashiv mamish. And everything before Hashem is compared to, is like nothing, not even talked about. And Alter Rebbe spends 12 chapters of this in Shar Yochad Vamunah, which is the next section of the Tanya. Asher al kain yasala yizbarash tichla lav nefesh kol chai ledavik likala ba'ira. And therefore what happens is because he understands the greatness of Hashem and understands how the whole entire creation is nothing compared to Hashem, so this arouses in him a desire to want to get closer to Hashem to the point of his kalalus to be incorporated in Hashem. That's what his kalalus means. To be incorporated in Hashem. What's a corporation? Corporation has no single individual. Who does this store belong to? Okay, who does Viacom belong to? You can't say Viacom belongs to, I just picked that one out of a hat. You can't say Viacom belongs to any specific individual.
It's a conglomerate.
It's a corporation. And in this corporation, this tentality, it forms this one organization called Viacom. Okay, so if you were to sue Viacom, for example, you couldn't sue any specific individual. You have to sue the corporation because it's a single entity. So what happens now is this person wants to be incorporated in godliness, in the infiniteness of Hashem. He wants to lose himself and be part of it because he understands how the world compared to Hashem is like nothing. And therefore he feels his own non-existence and wants to do his best to feel how the world really is nothing besides Hashem. Of course, if you do that, you're going to disappear, you're going to dissolve. V'gam nafshi v'ruach asher b'kibra, and also the his actions of his, which are expressed by his soul, and his speech was expressed by his soul, which is within him. Kach yasul lahen lihyeis kaleisolav b'chashecha v'chafetza l'tzeis minertaka v'hu aguf. And he really wants, he feels that, you know, the proper thing for me to do is that my soul just leave my body. L'davka b'ayt is to stick myself onto Hashem. Just to do a nadav and aviv. Okay, the person feels that that's what he should be doing, but he's not doing that because he doesn't feel like Nadav and Avihu does. You feel like Nadav and Avihu, you wind up like Nadav and Avihu. What happened with them? They wanted to experience the ultimate godliness. And in doing so, they did. They were successful at what they did. What they wanted to achieve, they achieved 100%. They wanted to experience the totality of Hashem. And in doing so, lost their existence. As Rashi explains over there, he says that he tells them that when they were taken out, so the Rashi comments that their clothes weren't burned. So what happened? It says a fire came out. It's not like Raiders of the Lost Ark where they open up the box and everybody disappears. No. It says, two threads of godliness enter their nostrils and burnt up their souls. The same way, if you take like a match and you hold it near a bigger flame, the match has a tendency, you can explain this according to the laws of physics and with gravity and air currents and the whole business, but the larger flame has a tendency to be drawn towards the bigger flame, and in doing so loses its existence as a small flame and just becomes part of the big flame. That's what happened with Nadav and Avihu. Their souls, which are a portion of godliness, lost their existence as separate entities as the souls of Nadav and Avihu, and became incorporated and included into the infiniteness of Hashem.
Oh, yeah.
This person wants to do that too, but he can't.
But later, what?
Because his soul's just not going there. Mm-hmm. Why? Hashem doesn't want him to. That's why Nadav and Avihu are called sinners.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not born to have our souls fly out of our bodies. But when you think about their intentions and what they wanted to do, the intentions were tremendous, and their ability to actually act on it too and achieve it, to experience the ultimate in godliness.
See, it still sounds misguided, though.
Totally, because that's not what you're supposed to be doing.
Right.
You're not supposed to be flying out of your body.
Like that was, I don't know where I heard this, so I don't know the source of it, but one, I don't know if it's an interpretation or what, midrash, whatever, but of Adam and Chava, that one of the reasons that they wanted to eat from the tree was so that they could serve God better.
Okay.
Now that we know.
Yeah,
but it sounds a little similar to what this is saying, because they, you know, God told them what to do, they had what to do, God said, this is how you serve me.
I think that was actually part of the rationale of the snake. If you eat from you eat from this, you'll be able to serve Hashem much better. You'll be godlike, okay. You know. So
that makes more
sense. Yeah, this is it. They wanted to go in, and was it curiosity? I don't know if you want to call it curiosity that happened with Nadav and Avihu. It's they wanted to experience, what is it like to go in the Holy of Holies? No.
They wanted
to experience this ultimate godly revelation. And for them, it was too much. Rakshu, he says, Baal karcha chayas. The only thing is he says, by force you live. We want to. Really when it comes to down deep, every Jew wants to do a Nadav and Avihu. Why is it that we don't? Is because that desire to get closer to Hashem to such a degree is really obscured, which might be a good thing. But you have, for example, when it talks about Arba Shenichnas Lepardes, you have, you know I'm talking about, Yisrael, four people who went into the garden. You have Rabbi Akiva, I can never remember who the first person, fourth person was. Is Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Zerin, Rabbi Elisha ben Avoyev, and I can't remember who the fourth person was. And what were they doing? Is they were delving into Kabbalistic texts and discerning and trying to tap into the oneness of Hashem using their intellect. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's no Holy of Holies, there's no trees, they're using their own brains. Rabbi Zera died. He experienced intellectually what, I suppose, not even what one is, but what zero is. And it was just too much for his soul. He just flew out. The second person, whose name I can't remember, went crazy from it. Mm. Because when he saw what nothing is, what absolute nothing is, his brain just like went tilt and couldn't come back. Mm-hmm. Elisha ben Avoyev just said, the whole thing doesn't make any sense, and just gave up everything. This would be
gave
up Judaism.
Really?
Yeah, he
just gave up Judaism. He said, I'm not doing this anymore. This whole thing doesn't make any sense. Okay, and there's a story in the Gemara about him that talks about when after that incident had happened, he was thinking about it, and then he saw a father tell his son, climb the tree and shoo away the mother bird. And on the way down, the kid fell out of the tree and died. Now, it's there are two commandments in the Torah that it says what the reward for is in this world.
Kibbut Avaim.
Kibbut Avaim and Shliach HaKan. And both of them is long life. So here's this kid who's doing two mitzvahs right. that guarantee long life, and he dies while doing them. He says, that's it. There's no such thing as Hashem. And he gave up the whole thing. To such an, but he was still Elisha ben Avoyev. So it says that Rabbi Meir always kept him as a teacher, even afterwards. People would yell at him. He's an apocryphal. How could you learn? He said, I'm taking the nut and throwing away the shell. But to tell you the stature of Elisha ben Avoyev, it says that they were once walking on Shabbos.
Right.
Rabbi Meir was walking and Elisha ben Avoyev was riding a horse. And they got to a certain point and Elisha ben Avoyev told him, you have to go back because this is as far as the Tchum Shabbos is. You cannot go so far. So he said to him, how do you know? He says, as we were talking, I was counting the hoofbeats of the horse. Can you carry a conversation and count at the same time? No. So this tells you the guy has a tremendous intellect. Okay? But Rabbi Meir comes back to him and says, I will only go back if you come back with me. Metaphor. And he responded, every day, a voice rings out from Chorev, from Mount Sinai, and says, every Jew can do tshuva except Elisha ben Avoyev. Who are we talking about over here? This is a guy who says the whole Judaism is worthless, and he hears a voice crying out from Sinai. When was the time you heard one of those? I would go say we would need some serious medication. And says that this voice is saying, I can't do tshuva. Okay, this tells you the capability of this people. This is not just people sitting back and you know, peace and love and hippie Judaism. That's not what these guys were into. This was very serious stuff.
So does that mean that he has no share in the world to come?
There's a whole story that happened. This is when he died, and he didn't go back. They split, and they never saw each other after that. And he died very shortly thereafter, Elisha ben Avoyev.
Right.
It says that there was a black pillar of smoke that emanated from his grave. Of course, he was buried like on the side, outside by the fence, the whole business over there. And Rabbi Meir was very distraught. And he had a dream that his teacher came to him and said, Meir, they are not letting me into Gehenna. Because, what's the whole purpose of Gehenna in Judaism?
To purify
the Neshama so they can go into Gan Eden. And they said, since I did what I did in the course of my lifetime, they don't want me to get purified to go into Gan Eden. So Rabbi Meir davened. Rabbi Meir is known as, in the vernacular, as Rabbi Meir Bal Hanes. That's the Rabbi Meir.
Right.
You know, it says, if you're ever being chased, just say, God of Rabbi Meir, help me.
Huh.
Right? You know, so let's look. This type of a thing. Or if you ever lose anything, put a coin in a tzedakah pushkir earmarked for the tzedakah funds of Rabbi Meir Bal Hanes, and you'll find it. Okay, all these type of things about Rabbi Meir. Okay, so Rabbi Meir davened for his teacher, and the smoke turned white. And he understood that they had led him into Gehenna. But the pillar was still there after 12 months. And we know that the most heinous of individuals stays in Gehenna for 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
He was very upset. And he had it, again, Rabbi Elisha of Venevoy came to Rabbi Meir. And said, now they're not letting me out of Gehenna.
Yeah.
So he davened again, and the smoke went away, and he understood that his teacher was in Gan Eden. What happened after that, if they reincarnated him, made him come back again? Vesefnish, I didn't hear any of those type of stories.
So just out of curiosity, once he became an apicurus, so he that act, that negates everything he did in his life up until then? The act of becoming an apicurus, I don't mean to sidetrack.
Yeah. The reason being is now he used everything that he had learned and turned it around the other way to try and prove his new point of view.
To
all of his learning. Yeah, what he did for himself. Yeah. How it is that, even for himself. What he did is all the learning that he had, he now used it to switch it around and come up with the wrong conclusion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it says in the Torah that there are 70 interpretations of the Torah which are correct, mm-hmm. and 70 which are incorrect.
Oh, never heard that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, 70 interpretations which are correct and 70 which are not correct. And so you could drag around and come up with all kinds of things and come up and say, look what I could do. Okay? So, I used to have a teacher when he would tell that story, he would turn to somebody and say, when I die, are you going to be good like Rebbe Meir and pray I go to hell too? Anyway.
Be careful what you ask for.
Yeah.
They won't let me into hell.
Hey, so because what it says, Baal Karchach with the top line on Chav Beis. So that's what it says, Baal Karchach Chai. We are forced to be alive. Our souls want to fly out of our bodies, but that's not the plan that Hashem has for us. It says our soul is stuck inside our body like a widow. And no thought can grasp Hashem at all. A widow having no one to take care of her. That's the way our soul is inside our body. It's not connected to its source. How is it that you want to grasp Hashem, to sit and think of the greatness of Hashem? You're never going to get there. You can't get there from here. But going step by step by step, you never hit infinity. But if you want to get Hashem, so he already said in chapter 4, and he says it, he'll say it again in chapter 35 through 40, do what Hashem wants. If you do what Hashem wants, so now you're grabbing Hashem's ratzon. You're attaching yourself to the will of Hashem. And the will represents totality. Just as when you say, I want. When you say, I want, what part of you wants?
You're in, so.
No, I want to learn Torah.
No.
When you say, I want, it's not your head, it's not your intellect, it's not your emotions, it's not your stomach, it's you. When you say, I want, it's your totality wants. So Hashem has a ratzon as well. That's an expression of Hashem's totality. So now when we are doing something, which is an expression of Hashem's will, like learning or doing a mitzvah, so now, what are you connecting to? Hashem's will. Which equals Hashem's totality. You want to grab Hashem? Do something good. Do something about it. You can't just sit and think about it. Do you have a question, Yisrael?
No. Okay. I'm just contemplating.
Kamashul ha-mechabek as-a-melech hanal is an example of the end of chapter 4, where it talks about hugging the king. So there he says that a person's going to say, you know, I hug the king. And someone's going to say, you didn't hug the king. He was wearing robes. You hugged the king's robes. Mm-hmm. Is a ridiculous reply. Right. Because since the king is inside the robes, you are, they have nothing of their own. They are part of the king. Right. Okay? If I grab you like this, right, like by your sleeve, okay, it would be a correct thing for you to say, let go of me.
Right.
Okay, but I'd say, I'm not grabbing onto you, I'm only grabbing onto your sleeve. But since you're in the sleeve, it's you. So this physical object, this tefillin that the person is putting on, okay, it's a piece of leather, it's a cowhide. And if you put it under a microscope, it will look just like a pair of shoes. But it is the will of Hashem. And by using it, you're grabbing onto the will of Hashem, which equals Hashem's totality. And now, this person who wants to use this opportunity to hug Hashem with his full heart, soul, and might. Yes. And how do you do that? Da'ahainu kiyum tariag mitzvos b'maisa divarom achshava. In other words, what is he prescribing for this person who's going through the motions and doesn't feel the pitter-patter of a burning desire in his heart? He tells them, go do something good. Okay? That means fulfilling all the 613 commandments of the Torah in action, speech, and thought. What's the mitzvah involved in thought? We talked about that at great length in chapter 5. Shehu asagas v'yadiyas ha-Torah, canal, that's knowing Torah. Because there's a difference between studying Torah. Right now you're studying Torah. Yeah. But you could have no clue what I'm talking about. Which means you have no hasagah, you have no understanding of it. It's a different thing. Once you understand it, so now it's part of you, it's a whole different thing. You're using your thought now. Whereas with studying Torah is technically an expression of speech. In order to fulfill your obligation of studying Torah, you have to articulate the words. So, but comprehending Torah, that's with the brain. Mm-hmm. So now, person knows where he is, he knows where he's holding, and he's really concentrating. And he is got this idea. He understands that from the very recesses of the understanding of his heart, and in the brain and in his mouth, his brain, his mouth, and his heart are all on the same plane. They're all doing what they need to be doing. And he's doing the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, for example, as an expression, as it is a conclusion of the very understanding of his heart and his brain. That means to say that the Torah of Hashem is his only desire, and he toils in a day and night using his mouth. And his hands and all his other body parts are fulfilling the mitzvahs according to the dictates of his heart and his brain. Okay, so now, so he's going through the route, he's going through the motions, he's doing everything 100% okay. He's missing a little bit on the feelings. So what happens though, but he understands why he should be feeling it, but he's just not feeling it. Mm-hmm. So what happens, tfuna zu mislabeshes b'maisa divar ha-machshava the Torah mitzvaseha. What happens now is this understanding why he should be feeling it is now expressed in the Torah and the mitzvahs. Because what is it? What's the proponent now? What's propelling him to do the Torah and the mitzvahs? Is he understands, I love Hashem. He doesn't feel that he loves Hashem, but he understands, I love Hashem. And because I understand that I love Hashem, I understand that I have to do the mitzvahs. So he's doing it. So that's the the impetus behind the mitzvahs. So it says, he said in chapter 4 that the person who truly loves Hashem does mitzvahs. And it's impossible to truly do mitzvahs unless you love Hashem. Mm. So this person now truly loves Hashem. You remember, this is the best he can do. His neshama is in a state of pregnancy, as he said in the note before. And he can understand why he loves Hashem, and he can understand why, because of his love of Hashem, he needs to do these mitzvahs. So his doing the mitzvahs is a sense of love of Hashem. Fine. No problem. And this then, what happens is this gives his mitzvahs a vitality, a lebedikite, and wings to that they should soar up. He talks about this later in chapter 40 through 47. He talks about the idea of fear and love are the wings of the dove. That's what they're called in the Zohar. That the wings of a bird are used specifically for one purpose, and that's to cause the bird to fly. What part of the bird? The whole body of the bird flies with the wings. An interesting thing is that if you have a bird with a broken wing, it's still kosher. Because the life isn't dependent upon the wing necessarily. A bird can survive with a broken wing. So a person, they could do mitzvahs. And a person could do mitzvahs without the wings, without the fear and love. Right. It's not going to go anywhere. It's not going to get very far. But he's doing it. It's still kosher, 100%. But if you want your mitzvahs to fly, you have to do them out of a fear and love. And he talks about why you also need to have fear or awe, respect of Hashem, not just love Hashem. Mm-hmm. You ever see a bird fly with one wing? Doesn't work. By the way,
they go around
in a circle. Exactly. If you have a bird that you don't want to keep in a cage, but you want to keep it in the house and not have it fly around so much, you clip one wing. Take the feathers off of one wing. Okay, ki'ilo isek b'hem b'dechil v'rechim ha'mamash. And so Hashem says, okay, listen, look what this guy's doing over here. And Hashem gives him as though he did the mitzvah with fear and love. Because after all, who was it that made Hashem, that this person not have the ability to have a fear and love of Hashem? It's Hashem. So he's doing the best he can. He's going through the motions. He's doing everything 100%. Hashem says, okay, fine. We'll give it to him as though he's doing it with fear and love also.
But he knows he should have fear and love. And he wants to.
Yeah, he wants to, but he can't because his soul just doesn't do that.
And
it's like he's doing it with a love, a longing, a lusting that's felt in the heart. And his soul is thirsting to God because of the fiery flames of a love that's just in his heart. And why does Hashem consider it as though he's doing these mitzvahs with this wonderful, enwrapped love? Is because of this intellectual understanding of why he has to love Hashem, which is bringing him to do the mitzvahs to begin with. Because what is the purpose of loving Hashem? A person to sit down and meditate on the greatness of Hashem and come to a felt love of Hashem in his heart. So what? You have to do something. And that's why he's doing the mitzvahs. So this person, he's not feeling it, but he says, oh, at this point I should be doing the mitzvahs. He'd only be interested in his own body. Even if a person who's naturally a diligent scholar by nature, everybody loves their body and all their bodily pleasures more than they love spirituality. They'll tell you, listen, I would rather be sitting and learning than eating, which is true, but when the time comes to eat, they're eating too. Okay. We're talking about by Beinim. V'zeu ramza rizal ba'amram. And this is what I was alluded to in a saying of our sages, machshava teva kodesh baruch hu mitzarefes l'maisa. A good thought Hashem joins to action. What does that mean? Some people interpret it to mean, well, I thought about doing good, so Hashem considered it as though I did it. No, sorry. You know, I had every right intention. I was going to do it, but, you know, it didn't happen, but Hashem considers, since I had thought about it, no, that's not what it means. Because if that would have been the case, and it should have said, Hashem considers as though he did it. A person has a good thought, so Hashem considers it as though he did it, did the deed. What does it say? A good thought Hashem connects to action. But the fear and love which is in the revealed part of the heart, they provide the vitality by enclosing, the fear and love enclosed in the action of the deed, the performance of the mitzvah, to give it wings to fly. Because the heart happens to also be a physical part of the body. And you get a lot, you know, people say, you have these older people who were raised traditional and have given up the traditions. And you're talking with them about doing something traditional. The response is, I'm a good Jew in my heart. You ever heard that expression? I'm a good Jew in my heart. Okay, and because they do feel something, so because the heart is also a physical entity, shehem kli hamaisa, that just like any other part of the body that you're doing something with, like we said before, I wish there would be a list, but he talks about it later on in Tanya. that the 248 commandments correspond to the 248 body parts. And goes so far as to say, this is in the Gemara actually, that each mitzvah has its own body part. Each body part has its own mitzvah. But I've never seen a matching list. I'd like to know what mitzvah I do with my spleen, for example. You know, some of them are easy. You give charity with your right hand, you put tefillin on your left hand, you talk Torah with your mouth. You know, you do chalitza with your right foot. You know, these type of things. Those are easy ones. And fear and love are within the heart. Just like any other body part. This is the mitzvah associated with this body part of the heart. Is the mitzvah of Ahavtes Hashem Elokecha and the mitzvah of Ahavtes Hashem Elokecha Tiru. Fear and love of Hashem. Physically.
In the left and right ventricle?
The left and right ventricle. The only thing is that when you're putting on tefillin, you're putting on tefillin on the outside of your body.
Right.
When you're loving Hashem, it's with the inside of your body. Because it just so happens, even though there's expression, his heart is on his sleeve, but I've never actually seen anybody with their heart on their sleeve. I don't think I would want to either. But the heart is on the inside. So you can't see how much a person loves or fears Hashem. I could see if you're wearing tefillin or talking Torah. But I can't see how much you love Hashem, or how much you believe in Hashem. All those inner mitzvahs. Therefore, it's possible that a person can utilize the fear and love which is in the recesses of his heart to act as wings to elevate his mitzvahs as well. Should we stop here or should we continue the finish the chapter?
I don't think I have time, unfortunately.
You have it? Okay, so we will stop here then.